Step one, press record.
Step two, do everything all over again.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Mm-hmm. But not Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the other Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
The original.
Yeah, the original 1992.
The best one.
The Buff. Oh.
That's right, I said it.
Oh.
That's right, I said it.
Did you watch all of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, all seven seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all of the commentaries repeatedly?
No.
Then you can't have that opinion.
I can.
You are not allowed.
I watched so much. I watched enough Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Haven't earned it.
Look.
What?
I have to respect the original.
I mean, I also very much so respect the original.
In fact, I don't know why they did a whole series and didn't have Christy Swanson play Buffy.
Because they needed to back it up, and Christy Swanson was already too old even to be a high school senior. And when they rebooted the television show, it was 1997, which was 5 years later, and they started her as a sophomore instead, so they had more of a ramp for high school. Ask me anything, bitch. I didn't mean to call you bitch.
That's okay.
That seems harsh.
I know this is going to be a good episode because of your Buffy knowledge.
Oh, gosh. Now the pressure's on.
Yeah, the pressure's on.
Uh-oh.
Bitch.
Oh.
But really, I think it's because this film came at a perfect time. This film was for me when it came out.
Yeah, where were you?
So it's nostalgic. I was the demographic they were reaching.
Were you a valley girl with...
No, I was in
with
middle school, maybe?
With your preppy nature and your fashion sense?
Like, for real. No, it was middle school. I watched it and I was like, this movie's a shit. I also like Clueless was totally my demographic.
Oh,
so
yeah.
These two are very nostalgic for me. I love this. And then the other Buffy came out and I was like, why did they think they needed to make it again? It was already really good.
I remember watching the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer and being like, that was a weird name. And then forgetting everything for a really long time and getting into Anne Rice vampires for a while. And then I randomly caught an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the series. I caught a season 4 episode. And then I asked my nerd friends at the time that I was friends with if they had any Buffy that I could watch, because this was before I could afford all of the DVDs. And my friend had them all on tapes and they were re-showing on the WB and UPN. Watched all the tapes that were in order, and if there were any that were out of order, I re-recorded on the tape, and I also made labels for all of my friends' tapes.
Oh my god.
The original Virgoing. That was my inception.
Incredible.
Yeah, because I got way obsessed. And when I started watching, they were in season 6.
I know everybody really loves the series Buffy the Vampire Slayer with Sarah Michelle Gellar. I've just never, and I tried, my friend made me sit down and watch several, and I'd go through the whole series. I still would, but I still watch it and I think, gosh, Buffy's fucking annoying and moody.
My friend Amanda is a huge Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan too, and she says as she gets older, when she tries to go back and rewatch, she gets more and more annoyed with Buffy as the years go by.
That's the thing. I think I missed it, and I would have liked it if I was of the right age and could deal, but I was too old at the time that I finally saw it and was like, why is everybody crazy about this show? Because she's the moodiest, whiniest, most emotionally unhealthy, brattiest person.
Like, as a teenager, I remember being like, yeah, I get it.
She's an asshole to her friends.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But she's also really nice to them and saves their lives a lot, you know? But Casey, to bring us back into alignment, we're not here to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the series. We're here to talk about the movie.
The movie.
The legend. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The movie.
Where alcoholism is...
Cute.
Where
really pervy pedophilia themes are...
Cute.
Where
high school age people telling you that you should sell your business and leave town because something is going on is
cute.
Yeah,
it's really cute.
Where lame cheerleader dances are cute, but we love it.
We love it a lot.
So much.
Yeah.
Theme song.
Beep.
Theme song.
Beep. It's me, Sarah Marie, and I'm a sucker for a good vampire film.
And I'm Casey, and I'm just a sucker.
Woo. But for reals, Casey writes and studies scripts, and I think that she's a damn genius.
Oh, thank you. And Sarah Marie really likes vampires, and it's going to shine in this episode because she's going to have a lot to say about Buffy
stuff. It's true. Overhype me all you want, because I do.
And together, we're like some of the ladies that make up Little Renegade Films, a production house that creates podcasts and web series and other sweat trits.
And this is Bloodsuckers, a podcast where we endeavor to watch every vampire film that we can get our fangs into.
And it's like super fans and filmmakers will be like pumping you full of our own personal brand of heroin or whatever. Like, I don't know, like commentaries and opinions and stuff.
So suck it up and listen in. Tonight, we sink our teeth into 1992's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But first, Messy Mouse.
You know, when you're trying to get a dance at the school dance, but It turns out you're dancing with somebody you really just want to suck their blood and ruin their good time, and then you like do it and you get blood all over your mouth?
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes our mouths get messy and we mess up all over the place.
Here's last week's
disgusting accidents.
Couple things. First off, we did not make a big deal out of the fact that last week was our 50th fucking motherfucking episode.
Yeah, woo!
Ridiculous shout out time!
To us!
Is that cat?
Yeah.
I love you!
Ridiculous shout out time!
Casey.
Yes.
I am so proud of us.
I'm so proud of us too.
We have been doing this podcast.
We did this 50 times.
50 times.
Oh my God. I've watched 50 movies.
You've watched 50 vampire films.
Wow.
And you've podcasted about them 50 times.
So have you.
I know.
It's incredible.
It really is really incredible. And several people have listened.
I know. Thank you everybody out there listening.
Seriously,
to our podcast.
Thank you so much. We wouldn't have made it 50 episodes in if it weren't for your support and frankly our joy of doing this podcast, mm-hmm. even though it defies all logic as to why one would want to based on the material we have to work with.
It's because we're hot. Come on.
Oh yeah, sorry.
God.
We like love this because we're hot and the movies are hot and that just makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Casey, Sammy E.
Thank you, Sarah Marie Curry.
For continuing to show up week after week and watch vampire films with me and then talk about them.
Well, you bait me with snacks. Of course I'm showing up.
I know.
She really does.
I
show up and she's like, I understand that when Casey comes over, she needs snacks. So she provides me snacks.
Here's the thing.
It's amazing.
I need snacks and you're just a cover for that.
She says, Casey, come over. I have some snacks. And then she turns on a vampire film. Uh-huh. And then at the end of it, she sticks headphones on my face.
Yeah, it's true.
Puts a microphone
you
in front of me.
Sit down here and you talk.
It works every time.
Seriously, Casey, thank you. I love this podcast.
Thank you. I love this podcast too. And I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
Ridiculous shout out. Shout out.
Over. Want to do some non-romantic kissing?
Yeah. You have to commit to it.
No, I'm not going
to
do it.
Ugh.
Sorry, I'm not. Unless I'm in an improv show with you, I will not kiss you unless you write it in a script and then I'll kiss the heck out of you. I will.
I'm going to write a stupid short just for that. It's going to be a terrible short film, uh-huh. but I'm going to write a big sexy kiss in the middle of it.
Okay, we'll do it. I'm serious. But we're going to get the giggles every time.
Yes, we are. It's going to be glorious.
It's going to be ridiculous. Our other messy mouth is what was the blood score for Fascination last week?
We went through and scored it and then didn't tell you.
Yeah, we really did a bad job.
Great.
What was it?
Was it -9?
Okay, I'm going to tell you that Lip the Blood, the other this fucking guy's film, got a -5.
What did this one get?
-4.
-4?
It was one better than Lip the Blood because it had
ladies in it?
More women. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. So what do we say?
I've crossed oceans of time to be with you.
I love that. And that is sexy.
Van Halen.
But that is wrong on so many levels.
I want to suck your blood.
I say our love is stronger than death. And then you say,
but it's still not as strong as a femur.
A femur?
Yeah.
Like the bone?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, your femurs and your eye socket. Eye sockets are the strongest bones in your body.
Where's the femur?
The femur's your thigh.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It's concrete, baby.
Ooh. I don't want that to break.
No.
I don't want it to break at all.
Our love is stronger than death.
Give me peace. Love it so much.
Perfect.
Stupid.
Give me peace.
And I love it. Tonight, we drink deeply of the film Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the film from 1992.
Blonde, bouncy Buffy is your typical high school cheerleader, but all that changes when a strange man informs her that she's been chosen by fate to kill vampires.
Is that what the film's about?
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's 100%. Somebody did good with this one. It is one sentence and
blonde,
it nails it.
Bouncy, Buffy, fated to kill the vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, bam, boom. So here's the thing.
Everybody knows what this is about. Everybody knows what Buffy the Vampire Slayer the series is about. So just super fast. This is the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer where she's blonde, Valley Girl, high school student in LA who's a cheerleader, has a hot boyfriend. She's the it girl. And then all of a sudden her sitter, caller, teacher,
watcher,
thank you, her watcher shows up and is like, you are the chosen one to kill vampires. And she's like, oh my god, no I'm not, who are you, creepazoid? And he's like, yes you are. And then he throws a knife at her head and she catches it to prove it. And she's like, he's like, see? And she's like, oh my god, how dare you throw shit at my head. Mm-hmm. She didn't say shit. Mm-hmm. I said shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then she learns that she is the chosen one, and then she starts doing all sorts of workouts, and not that she needed it or it really changed anything.
There's a poorly edited montage,
and then she kills vampires, and then she kills the lead vampire. She swaps boyfriend friends halfway through. She ditches the jock and goes with Hop Hike,
played by Luke Perry,
punk guy.
Yeah,
it's great.
I mean, here's the thing. You compared this to Clueless in our intro, right?
Yeah.
Like, you watch them at the same time and they give you those same 90s.
Same vibe.
But Clueless is a well-structured film. And
yes.
This is not
Clueless is based on a different film. It's a retelling of a different film that's older. And
it's based on a Jane Austen novel.
Emma,
correct. Yeah. But here's the thing. I was watching this today and I was thinking about it like a writer. Mm-hmm. This is a classic Joseph Campbell hero center journey. There's a normal person, there's a call, they ignore the call, and then they get called again, and then they've got a train, and then there's a battle that goes south, and then there's a trying to return to the old ways but they can't, and then there's another battle, and then they triumph, the end.
Yeah,
Joseph Campbell,
like that.
All the way,
but like in 80s clothes and with Valley Girls,
90s clothes, and
super fun.
Yeah, but the structure of this was still, the pacing was weird, the structure was weird, the causation was weird,
it was missing chunks.
Yeah.
Realized when I watched it that it was edited strangely. I mean, I could follow the story very easily.
Sure.
But it was just very thin, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know how to explain it. It's just when there's a whole hour and a half to do a film, but somehow you can't tell a detailed story.
I'll give you an example. Merrick. Creepy pedophile vibe Merrick.
But we love him because that scene is hilarious.
Played by Donald Sutherland. Love him. But he shows up to the gym where Buffy's flipping and flipping and flipping.
She's doing gymnastics.
No, sorry. I misspoke. He shows up in the locker room where Buffy is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, you can't be in here.
This is a naked place.
Which is one of my favorite lines.
Great.
She takes a single Q-tip out of her locker. She Q-tips one of her ears and then she throws it back into her locker.
Yeah.
Which is a weird detail. No one should notice. It's obviously busy work.
It took me watching this film 5 times before I was like, wait, did she just Q-tip an ear?
Sure. He says, you're an hour late to training. And she says, I'm late for cheerleading right now. And then he goes, blah, blah, blah. You're called to be, you're the chosen one. And she goes, well, I don't want to be the chosen one. I don't think I am the chosen one. And he goes, well, there is this. And he throws a knife at her face and she catches it. And he's like, see, you're the chosen one. You got the reflexes, kid. And she's like, that's super fucked up. She ends up punching him. He ends up going, you punched me. She ends up going, I punched you.
I didn't even break a nail.
And that's how she accepts that there might be something to this whole Slayer call. And then in the film, we cut to a training montage with training montage music and many punchings of punching bags in a weird training space that Merrick lives in, which is weird. And then we cut back to the same outfit she was wearing in the locker room that she was about to change out of. Like, we go through three or four training montage costumes here, workout clothes, and then we cut back to the original outfit she was in, so we're in that same day again, and she's like, who is this guy? So it's completely different tones. It's like a tone shift, it's a time shift. So there's no like, the way that they storyboarded or set up the structure of the film is thin and weird. The end. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, that's a good example of what this film does the whole time.
100% true. And the other part of it is that they wrote really shallow scenes to convey the motion of the story from beginning, middle to end. So it feels kind of, oh God, how do I say this?
Superficial.
Superficial. Yeah.
And what's really interesting is, and I want to get to the trivia on this, Joss Whedon wrote this. Joss Whedon's a good writer. Fuck that guy and fuck his like onset dynamic and his like abusery vibes and his yucky yuckness. But the dude's a good writer, you know? And he wrote a great script. And then the director and the producers, because it wasn't, his money wasn't in it, or he didn't have enough power to throw around, like his script got cut to shit. And so I wonder if there were questions that would have been answered, like the fucking hypnotism of Lothos, played by Rutger Hauer, by the way, where Buffy would inexplicably zone into talking to him, and then like Luke Perry can walk up to her and say, "Buffy, he's evil, don't listen to him," and she's not even paying it. Like, none of that shit made sense.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
I have two things I want to talk about.
Okay.
I mentioned this when we were watching the film. Do you think they knew how rapey the scenes they wrote were?
That's the other question I have. Like, did they answer, was there more commentary on these rapey themes?
So when Merrick shows up originally to, it's great. I love this scene so much. It's so rapey. It's hilarious because the dialogue is so rapey, but Buffy plays it off like it isn't. And it just works in this really fucked up way. Okay. This is the one I want everybody to listen to, it because it's delightful. So he's just shown up in the gymnasium and he's alone with her. She's never met him before.
Are you looking for somebody?
I was looking for you, actually.
Why? Am I in trouble or something? Because if I am, I didn't do it.
No, you're not in trouble. I am. I'm years late. You should have been taught, prepared. But I wasn't certain until just now that it was you.
What are you talking about?
Saying that I've been searching everywhere for you, Buffy.
Why?
To bring you your birthright.
My birthright? Is that like a trust fund or something?
I think it'll be easier for you to understand this birthright if I show it to you. All right? So you come with me now to the graveyard.
No. My trust fund's in the graveyard? God, what's your damage?
Buffy.
You're one of those skanky old men that, like, attacks little girls and stuff, right? Well, forget you.
My name is Merrick, and you have been chosen, Buffy.
That's the moment, and it cracks me up every time, because basically how you read that is, I've come to show you my dick.
Yeah, it's your birthright, baby.
It'd be better if I could just show you my dick right now.
And
it's so creepy. It's so weirdly creepy.
I feel like Joss Whedon was being creepy on purpose so that we would be like, what the fuck? And then this blonde, right? Because it was revolutionary at the time that this blonde who you thought would be hunted is the hunter. She's the slayer. So I get the theme of setting up all these creepy fucking pervy men, but it doesn't come off great in retrospect. Like the whole fucking thing with Rutger Hauer that plays Thanos or Kronos or Taltos or whatever his name is.
Luther.
Lothos. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me get this right. The Slayer, who we see in repeated flashback, keeps getting born only to instantly get hypnotized by Lothos.
Yes.
And murdered, which means that she is born to be, in the metaphor, sexually assaulted by Lothos, who continues to live and go on. And yes. Also this other old creepy dude, his job is to find her and to train her to get murdered by Lothos.
Yeah.
Not great.
No.
Not great when you boil it down.
Mm-mm. I'm very confused by the Lothos relationship to the Slayer, because what is that moment when she sees him for the first time in the parade float graveyard?
Uh-huh.
And so it's the first time she runs into Lothos, and Merrick is there too. And so Lothos can just instantly hypnotize her, and he goes to bite her, and Merrick is like, no, she's not ready for you.
Right? That's the thing that really fucking tipped me
off.
Is
this just this weird game where they wait until she's ready and then they fight? Like, what?
You know what it feels like to me? Grooming. That's what it feels like to me. Grooming.
You're gonna ruin this whole movie for me, aren't you?
Sorry. Joss Whedon ruined everything with his awfulness, because I loved him so much and he broke my heart.
You are right, though. There's no reason why Lothos wouldn't just kill her there immediately.
And that's why I'm wondering, how fucked up was his script and how did they change it? Or is this what he originally wrote and then he thought about it and went, ooh, I better flesh out this lore for the television show, and took 5 years to pull his head out of his ass and write a better lore, which is still not great. It's still young girls going off to get murdered.
Yeah.
But they fucking talk about it on the show. They're like, this is fucked, which is nice.
I don't think it's fucked that young girls are slayers.
I don't think it's fucked that young girls are slayers, but I do think it's fucked that they're surrounded by people who are like, this is your destiny to go do this, right?
And they don't have a choice about it.
And then when you find out the mythos in season 7 of how the first slayer got created, bunch of old dudes in a tribe kidnapped, captured a girl, chained her up, and made her get infected by a demon so that she could fight vampires.
Oh.
Yup.
Why did they capture a girl to do that?
So Joss Whedon could write strong female characters.
Born of rape.
Yeah.
Huh. Huh, I had no idea. You find out that in the series?
In season 7, yeah.
Does Buffy find that out and get pissed?
Yeah, she says something like, you kidnapped a girl, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never made it to that episode, obviously.
Yeah, season 7. The whole thing is a metaphor for men in power and women fighting back and them dying inevitably in the end anyway.
Why does Buffy die?
Great question. I haven't finished the graphic novels.
But in the TV series, she doesn't?
Well, she dies twice saving the world, but she comes back.
That doesn't count.
I know. So a couple of casting things I want to talk about.
Wait, hold on. Okay. Also, all right. Lothos just dies so easily in the end.
Yeah.
The movies do this all the time where they set up this big level boss and they're like, Skirt's like, you have to prepare for this moment. He's been killing girls for centuries. It's going to be really hard. You're not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shows up to her school dance and she kills him immediately and he does no damage.
And while I think Paul Reubens, who plays the best vampire in this whole entire series, Paul Reubens, who was originally Pee-wee from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh my God, this is Pee-wee Herman at his finest.
Correct. And his real name is Amelin in the movie, his vampire name. While I think it's fucking delightful that he gets stabbed and then doesn't commit to dying at all and does the silliest, stupidest non-death death. My chest, kicking mm-hmm. the wall. And then rises up and does it again and then falls over.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense in the world.
No, all the other vampires just die immediately.
Yeah.
This was for comedic relief.
Yeah. Why? Why'd you fucking sell out the story like that, bro?
Because he was Pee-wee Herman and he did it because he's a comedian and the director laughed and he was like, keep it.
My real question is, why'd you keep that in the film? Director. Speaking of, the director is Fran Rubel-Kazooie, who later became a producer for Joss Whedon's Buffy.
I mean, he died eventually.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer series.
He died at the end.
Did he?
Yeah.
Or you just fall over again? Was he getting to get back up again?
No, to me, that was final.
Unreliable.
You're really irrationally angry at this one moment.
Unreliable narrator.
That is not worth being mad about because it was genuinely funny.
How dare you?
I know.
Fran Rubel-Kazooie is a woman.
The director?
Yeah, she's married to Kaz Kazooie. Because I know Kazooie and Kazooie were the producers for Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. I didn't know you were a woman.
You thought Fran was the name of a man?
I don't know. I got distracted by the Rubel and the Kazooie. If it's even pronounced that way, nothing is true anymore. I don't know. That's great.
Yeah.
That makes my heart happy. Directed by a woman. Why did you make that choice about him, though? Because that choice didn't fucking make sense. Is
this
he dead?
Is what, this is what you're dead? Mad about in this film.
Yes.
Okay.
I want to talk about casting. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Tons of amazing cameos in this from people that become amazing later, right? First off, starring Christy Swanson, Donald Sutherland, Paul Reubens, Rutger Hauer, Luke Perry.
Delicious.
Right? But then people that we didn't know were going to become people later.
What?
That's right. I said it. Hilary Swank is in this film. David Arquette is in this film. Also, the woman that played Cassandra, I looked her up because she looked really familiar to me. Natasha Gregson Wagner is actually the daughter of film star Natalie Wood and Richard Gregson.
Wow.
I know.
You didn't mention Ben Affleck.
I was getting there.
Okay.
And she did Lost Highway and Urban Legend and High Fidelity. And she's a familiar face. The end. Also, Stephen Root is in this film as the principal. And he is most famous for really caring a lot about his stapler in Office Space. But he's also in Barry as the assassin handler of Barry. He's also in True Blood. He's in a ton of stuff. So I completely missed that he was in this film. Ben Affleck makes one of his first film appearances in this as random basketball player who gets freaked out by vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Delightful. Thomas Jane, who plays this one-off mechanic talking to Lou Perry, later goes on to be the guy who stars in The Mist and a whole bunch of other stuff. He's done a lot, which is delightful. Let's talk about the vampires. Nosferatu-style vampires.
All of them? Were they?
Ears.
Oh, that was the only thing Nosferatu-y about them, though.
And some of them had junked
funny
up teeth.
Yeah. Lothos was very Dracula-like, though.
Yeah, very much so. With his cape and his flair for the dramatic.
And his rape.
Do you want to hear some trivia? Because there's a lot.
Yes.
Wait. We need to score this motherfucker.
Oh my God. We're so bad.
We're so bad.
We're so bad.
Oh my God. We're so bad. 50% non-straight, non-white men.
Yes.
Title characters. Christy Swanson, Donald Sutherland, Rutger Hauer, Paul Reubens, Luke Perry. And then her female entourage.
So the major characters were her and Pike, the Watcher.
And the evil big bad.
So no, I'm going to give him a no.
I don't think it's, yeah, I don't think it's a yes. 50% women. I still think it's a no.
Yeah, no, it's a no.
Yeah, because even the clique, the high school clique all had boy accompaniment. Equal screen time for non-white men.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yes.
We had the most Buffy. But was Buffy always on screen with a man?
No, she got kind of solo and alone at the end, didn't she?
She looked at a dress once in her montage. She worked out in a montage. But every other time she was with Pike or Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, but that's equal screen time. It's not more than.
Fair enough. Convo and content not about men or stereotypical women stuff.
Ooh, hard.
Right?
Hard.
She does talk about...
In the beginning, it's totally stereotypical.
I mean, that's the point. And then
I'm gonna go with no.
And then at a certain point, she's talking about being a slayer.
Her entire character is a cliche of women. I know she talks about being a slayer and being the chosen one.
And then there's still even a little commentary about her being a strong woman, right? Like when Luke Perry and her finally dance at the end, he's like, I bet you want to lead, don't you? And she's like, no. He's like, me neither.
She goes, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Is there one main female character who makes it through the whole film without being sexualized by the male gaze?
No.
Nope. Female lead.
Yes.
Casey, are you going to give this your bonus point for a good script?
No.
Good story?
Yes.
So you're...
Gets my whatever point.
Okay. It gets your whatever. Is it the good story point or the whatever point? I need to know.
It's the whatever point.
Okay. All right.
I think it's a good story. I think this script was written poorly.
Yeah. Concur. Bonus point for would she own it? Yes, I own it. Would I be a vampire in this world? No, I would not.
Why not?
Because of the pointy Nosferatu ears. Also because they, and we can see this demonstrated in David Arquette, and this is fleshed out in the series, but they instantly go through a character change. They become evil.
Oh, yeah.
When they get turned into a vampire.
You don't want that?
No, not unless I'm a super vampire like Drusilla or Darla. Mainly Drusilla, though, where I'm like...
So if you do own it, but you wouldn't be a vampire, does it get your point or not?
Real intelligent. Yeah, it gets my point because I own it because okay. It's or.
Great.
Expositiony point of exposition that over-explains explaining things, i.e. the Goldilocks rule. This is the point we give. If the world explains the rules of the world in a way that's clear and they do it in a show, not tell way, but it's not bad. They do a good job of telling us what the fuck is going on. And I don't think they get this point. Fight me.
Why?
The staring thing was really weird with Rutger Hauer. I mean, we clearly explained the lore about the Slayer, but I still had a lot of questions. But they did explain vampire rules, but they do it in a nuanced way.
They never talked about drinking blood.
They did say vampire a lot, though, so it's pretty obs.
They took her to a graveyard.
Yeah.
Figured it out.
Showed vampires rising from the dead. Talked about getting staked in the heart.
I don't think I was over-explained. If anything, I feel like I was under-explained. I think that was a result of bad writing, not of exposition.
Isn't exposition part of the writing?
I mean, yes and no. Exposition is telling the story through words, not through actions.
Mm-hmm.
Like explaining your story in dialogue because you've done a bad job of telling it.
I don't think they get the point.
Okay. I don't feel strongly enough about it to fight about it.
Yeah, I don't, that's weird. I'm gonna give them the point just because they did clearly define the vampire rules for the most part ish kind
without,
of
without explaining it in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
they never explained it at all in your face. I think they did it well.
They did emotional commentary, like when she went to stab Donald Sutherland Merrick in the throat and he went, heart, you have to hit the heart, right?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Did we like it though?
Yes.
Yes, we did. Yes.
We love it.
What score do you think this got?
A 4?
0.
Oh.
Baby, it neutralized.
Man, movies really are white.
Yeah.
They're super white.
Yeah, man, that's the other thing that I got awoken to in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, even before it came out that Joss Whedon was a real on-set asshole. And of course, I don't see it because, you know, you don't see the system you're benefiting from and swimming in. But Buffy the Vampire Slayer, super white show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super bummer.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready for the trivia so hard.
In the original version of the script, Merrick committed suicide to escape being turned into a vampire by Lothos, who wanted to know the Slayer's identity so he could dispatch her. It is this version that was restored in the Buffy Origin comic. Despite claiming he was cut from the movie, Seth Green does appear in it. Although it is just for 3 seconds, and for 2 of them, he is seen from behind. He's the short, red-haired vampire that gets kicked by Buffy outside the gym when a group of vampires, including him, are taunting her. You can recognize him by his haircut alone.
What? Seth Green was in this?
Seth Green? Look! Look at little baby Seth Green.
Oh my gosh, a lot of people really did get their start in this movie because you can tell they're just like background people in this.
Yes. It's wild. Well, to be fair, Seth Green has been working as a child actor for forever.
That's true.
So he was maybe just like, I'm going to be a vampire. The original script by Joss Whedon is heavily rewritten to make this movie lighter. In the original script, Buffy burns down the school gym in which the dance is being held in an effort to destroy the vampires. In Buffy the Vampire Slayer 1997, this fact is referred to several times as the series is seen as a spinoff of the original unproduced screenplay rather than this movie.
I wonder why they didn't have her burn it down. It's awesome.
Oh, and the vampires turned to dust in the original screenplay.
I think they were trying to change the tone of the film.
I think you're right. Famously changed into more teen-friendly without Joss Whedon's consent. I
mean, but maybe if that hadn't happened, he wouldn't have been inspired to make his own shit.
Yeah, no doubt.
And become a terrible person.
I think he probably started off terrible.
True.
And you know, he has a lot of writing credits on a ton of other stuff. Back to the trivia. David Bowie, Mick Jagger, and Carrie Elwes were set to make cameos as vampires, but these were cut due to time and budgetary constraints, Casey. Maybe it was money as well.
Well, they said that strictly about this. They didn't say that about changing the fire in the school.
Screenwriter Joss Whedon was so frustrated by how much of his vision was being mishandled and how much of it was being rewritten that he eventually left the set during production and never came back.
What was he doing on set anyways if he sold a script?
He was the writer. I don't know. I don't know how movies work. I don't know.
Must have been rough. I mean, it's still good.
Joss Whedon found Donald Sutherland extremely difficult to be around. Sutherland rewrote most of his dialogue and scenes, often making the often making the scenes incomprehensible in Whedon's opinion. Whedon praised Sutherland's abilities as an actor, but called his behavior rude and Sutherland a dick.
Really?
Oh, pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah.
Theatrical debut of Hilary Swank. The role of Amelin, Paul Rubens, was originally written to be a female character and was set to be played by Joan Chen. When she pulled out of the role, it was rewritten as a male character.
Oh, that was supposed to be a woman?
Yeah. A woman named Joan Chen.
It should have been a woman because there were no female vampire leads.
Yeah.
It was lame.
Oh, she's pretty.
That's actually why I was going to say you wouldn't be a vampire in this world because it's
stupid.
Misogynistic. Yeah.
Alyssa Milano was originally set to play Buffy.
Which one is Alyssa Milano?
She was in The Charmed.
That would be in a totally different Buffy style.
Yeah. This was Paul Rubens' first major film role after his notorious arrest. He appeared in Batman Returns earlier in 1992, but only in a cameo role. Do you remember that drama?
No.
Paul Rubens was arrested for masturbating in a theater.
What a silly guy.
What a silly man.
Must have been a good movie.
It was probably one of our favorite Lip the Blood.
Yeah, probably was.
That would actually delight me to no end. Two of the film's main stars, Luke Perry and Rutger Hauer, both died roughly 4 months apart in 2019.
Wow.
Right?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer makes you famous or kills you.
In this film, Buffy experiences cramps whenever she is in proximity to a vampire. She explicitly compares them to menstrual cramps. This aspect of her power was dropped in the subsequent television series.
That's good because you can tell a man wrote that because he has no idea what menstrual cramps are like. Because if a woman's experiencing menstrual cramps, it makes her go, oh, while she's walking around, you know that they're 5 million times worse than she's letting on and she would never be able to slay a vampire.
Yeah, ever.
How fucking ignorant.
She would lay down and die.
Yeah. Unbelievable. We're going to make her get cramps when she gets near a vampire.
And anytime a woman gets cramps, if she says, take her to the hospital. Because I guarantee you there's a woman in your life walking around somewhere who's dying on the inside and you have no idea.
Because she's tough.
Yeah. And cramps are a lifelong punishment. The end. I didn't have anything to add. Okay, they're a lifelong punishment brought about by stupid men. It's not the truth.
Whoa, girl.
I know.
Whoa.
Angry feminist. I actually think I am in my PMS zone. So.
I think you might be too.
You think
so? You've been irrationally angry at some things today.
I really, really have. On Luke Perry's show, Beverly Hills 90210, David Arquette, Michelle Abrams, and Hilary Swank, a regular for a while, are all in episodes. Aw, fun.
Nice.
Love a crossover. Christy Swanson later guest starred in the second season of SEAL Team, 2017 television show. The show's lead character is played by David Boreanaz, who also played the vampire Angel in Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the spinoff Angel.
Oh, so it's like the original Buffy met Angel.
Yeah.
Cool.
But he was now a SEAL and not a vampire.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You remember when they were in the restaurant, I said that woman played Artemis in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes.
That's incorrect. And the timeline doesn't even work out. That woman was Ricky Lake.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hold on. Totally Ricky Lake.
Right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But she looks... Go look up Artemis from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I mean, I could see why you would say that.
Paul Rubens completely improvised his death scene. Duh. What? I'm not mad. I'm really not.
Okay.
I love that scene.
No, you don't.
I do. No, I do. I'm delighted by it and I love it, but I also am mad that they didn't tell a better story. Casey, I really like storytelling. I don't know if you know this, but I like really want the story to be like the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
The story is what matters. The story is the life.
You think him taking a long time to die at the end ruined the story?
No. I think it was the piece of straw placed upon the camel's back that done broke the thing. Okay. I hate thinking about a camel breaking their back. I take it back.
I just want you to know that Paul Reubens was killed as a vampire and he had this funny moment of taking a death, making a death last, probably wasn't that long. And then in editing, they tacked it on to the end of the film 20 minutes later.
Like it was an outtake?
So it seems like it took 5 hours to die and he was down there oohing and aahing the whole time, but really editing did that.
It was really funny too.
It was, that's why it's in there, because it was funny.
Still mad.
Didn't ruin the story. It was funny. I would have done that.
I don't know why I'm mad.
I would have done that.
But I'm mad.
Because you're PMSing.
I'm really mad.
Don't do it.
I'm so mad right
now.
Don't
do it.
Vampires must be close. So I'm like really mad. Oh, Merrick dies while trying to finish the phrase, "The rest is silence," which is a hidden instruction to Buffy. Duh. This is actually a quotation from Hamlet by William Shakespeare. The phrase contains the dying words of Prince Hamlet, "The rest is silence."
Could you actually explain this part to me? When Lothos is going to kill her and he has her super hypnotized, and then the music stops playing, and then she becomes unhypnotized because the music stops playing.
Yeah, she like remembers.
And she realizes what Merrick said, and then all of a sudden she's unhypnotized. Why?
Bad exposition. No one explained how this works to us except that she just remembered what Merrick said to her, which is, and how the fuck did Merrick know to listen for when the music stopped? We never established that ever in any other part.
That's true. I just assume it's because he's been chasing Lothos forever and music was always involved somehow.
Yeah, they did a bad job of explaining that.
I don't think they did a bad job of explaining it. I think they fucked up the script.
Concur.
Which is, I guess, the same thing.
Yes. Also, that violin did not play and looks stupid.
I think it was clear plastic.
Yeah, it was stupid.
Guys, she's violent. Angry.
I'm so mad.
She's irrationally angry at things right now.
Here's the thing. You know what's actually happening? It's not the PMS. It's not the vampire cramps. What's really happening is I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer so much. I love the film. I love the original film. I read all of the comic before they got transferred over to Boom. All of the director's commentary. Used to rewatch them like every year all the way through. Fucking love is still palpable to me today. Have you ever loved something so much that you get obsessively starving for it? You just want to devour it, lay in a pile of its blood and be like, this is the best.
Yeah, Anita Berber.
Yeah, violently passionate for it.
Okay, maybe I've never been that fanatical.
Or I'm just a lot. to be fair. I'm a lot.
I think many people were aggressively fanatical about Buffy, though.
Sure. It was such a fucking bummer to read all that stuff about Joss Whedon. A really shocking revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that if it's not the thing that you care about, you're like, it doesn't surprise me. But it really hurts. Really fucking hurts. And then to read his ridiculously long article that he released in one of the magazines where he finally came out after all this controversy, that he was unapologetic and only making excuses for himself.
Uh-huh. So
something that he's like written about, and now to see all of the flaws in the thing that I love so much.
Does it make his art flawed?
His art was always flawed. It's not necessarily, well, I mean, the whitewashing for one.
Ugh. Womp. You can't because he's an abuser?
It's not that I can't. It's that I need to give it a lot more time before I watch it all again.
Why?
I think that there are different levels to everything of separating the art from the artist, but I have most often, if I find out that an artist is an abuser, I stop consuming their art. I just do. Except in very rare instances, like Stanley Kubrick, who was just as bad, if not worse, than Joss Whedon.
Then why do you still watch his art?
Because I fucking love his art.
You love it more than Buffy?
Different. They're different.
But why do you keep watching Kubrick, but you don't keep watching Buffy?
There's less Kubrick to watch.
Mm.
Buffy's a really big time commitment.
This is why I've never seen it all the way through.
And some of the writing is really great and some of the writing's really bad.
In Buffy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Is it possible, you think, to acknowledge that Joss Whedon is an abusive asshole and treated people poorly, but be grateful that he existed so he could create this art that inspired you and empowered you?
Yeah. Also empowered Sarah Michelle Gellar. Sounds like she took great care of people on set, which is cool.
Did he leave her alone on set?
Yeah, I think so.
Because she had to do a good job?
She was very powerful. No one is ever going to know all of the ins and outs. A friend of mine that I knew back in my theater days was actually a recurring role on that show. And I remember them mentioning something about people sleeping with the director, referencing Joss Whedon. I remember being like, no way. No, I refuse to believe that. Only for all of these stories to come out later and being like, oh, that was true.
It's because you loved the thing.
because I love the thing.
Did you love it because you were able to put yourself in the position of the slayer? The story was about you?
No.
What made you love it?
The angsty feelings and the hot love story between Buffy and Angel, and then Buffy and Spike, and also Drusilla was my jam the whole entire time. And then you fall in love with the other characters too. Like Willow's arc is really amazing. Seth Green was always incredible. Nicholas Brendan was a very special poor fella. Dreamy dudes, vampires, angst. I'm in like Flynn. And the episodes, the way that they explored adulthood and themes was very powerful to me.
Okay.
Why are you asking?
I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes and imagine a piece of art I loved turned out was written by somebody who was terrible and trying to figure out what I would do about that art.
For me right now, I do. Like, my love of that series will never go away. Always acknowledge this shitty shit that came out. I'm still, like, grieving for the Joss Whedon that I imagined in my head. The really amazing, strong women, fighter, creative, healthy set. And I think the other thing is, like, I look at a show like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and I'm like, oh my gosh, can you imagine getting to go to set every day? And to find out that it was a toxic set breaks my heart as an actor, especially like all of the people that felt like they would never work again if they
spoke out.
And I've been on set and in production in situations with some very asshole-ish manipulative behavior. And I have felt that exact same pressure. If I speak out, I'll never get to work with this company ever again. That's me on a tiny scale. Can you imagine being in LA and making it onto a television show and that being the truth, that you're miserable and sad and scared all the time and people keep telling you that you've made it and you're so lucky? That's the thing that makes it hard to rewatch, is like knowing that some of those actors while they're acting are also experiencing yuck.
Okay.
And that's gonna take some time.
Sure.
Wow, we took a turn on this, didn't we?
No, it's a great turn though.
Yeah. Cha-la-la. And the human stories that you tell through the medium of sci-fi are so beautiful and profound. And I fucking love Joss Whedon's writing.
I'm sorry. What?
So I was just circling back to my love of Joss Whedon's writing.
But did you just call Buffy the Vampire Slayer sci-fi?
It is. It's fantasy sci-fi, baby.
Vampires are sci-fi?
Yes, they are the science fiction. They're fiction of science. They come from nature. Nature is science fiction.
I don't think that's right.
Horror, action, comedy, drama, horror fiction, adolescent, supernatural. Okay, supernatural.
Supernatural, yes. Sci-fi, no. Sci-fi is Star Trek.
You're right. It's fantasy. That's what it's called. I was thinking of Firefly, which is sci-fi.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Firefly.
Is that Joss Whedon too?
Yes. And Serenity. And Dollhouse, which is very fucked. Ooh, it's fine. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry it took a weird turn.
You're allowed to be hurt if you want to be hurt.
Good, because I am. It's just complicated. It's just a complicated, complex issue for something that I love. And also, I think maybe I'm PMSing a little.
Yeah, I think so.
What else do you want to talk about today, Casey, now that Sarah Marie has taken over the episode again?
How much money did this movie make?
Great question. The budget was $7
million. Whoa.
Opening weekend made $4.5 million. Gross worldwide was $16.6 million.
Okay, so they made it back and doubled it, a little over doubled it.
Yeah.
What else has Christy Swanson been in?
Oh my gosh, let me tell you.
I don't know her from anything else.
I feel like she was a 90s darling. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Dude, Where's My Car, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Flowers in the Attic, 1987. Wild. That's what she's known for. That doesn't seem correct. Oh yeah, she was in Hot Shots, The Chase with Martin Sheen, Higher Learning, The Phantom, lots of stuff. Basically.
Yeah, that's a long list.
Yeah.
I guess I just don't watch TV.
Treatment of the Female Character. Not great.
Just because she was the chosen one?
Yeah, just because she was surrounded by men that were telling her what to do and objectifying her, maybe. And also, like,
were they objectifying her?
Well, she was also just in a romantic relationship right away with Luke Perry.
No, she wasn't. She had her other boyfriend. Oh, you mean like when she met him?
Yeah.
Isn't that
a typical high school thing?
A typical high school thing.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, isn't that how people date when they're younger?
You're right. Okay, fine then. Tropes. A common or overused theme or device, a cliche. The blonde in danger role gets turned on its head.
Mm-hmm. Didn't appear in photographs.
Photographs or mirrors.
Yeah.
Stakes,
crucifixes didn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
Holy water did.
Mm-hmm.
Fire did.
Mm-hmm. They can only come out at night. They look Nosferatu-ish. They can fly.
You have to be invited in.
They did a whole bunch of levitating.
You get mean when you're turned.
Yeah, you lose your soul.
Do you?
I mean, we find that on the television series, but in this, you just are evil. You just go evil.
Just evil.
You
just go evil.
Yeah. What was your favorite scene?
I think Pee-wee's death was really funny. Don't hate me.
I don't hate you. I love it too.
I really like the scene with Merrick and Buffy when he first meets her. Wow.
When he farts and eats her.
In the gym, like when he's creeping on her in a really creepy way that gets hilarious.
Why is he playing with that crystal?
I don't know. Ooh. I don't know.
It's like fondling a crystal. God.
I feel like I have a favorite scene and I can't think of what it is right now. What's yours?
Anytime Jennifer is on camera, friend with the crimpy hair.
Not Hilary Swank.
Michelle Abrams. I don't know why I'm so fucking delighted by her. I don't know why either. Delighted.
I really enjoy How Funky Is Your Chicken? How Funky Is Your Chicken?
How loose is your goose?
Our goose is totally loose. That's like been an anthem in my memory for as long as I can remember.
It's so weird. I really like when she ties the ribbon around her hair and then she gets into bed, but Rutger Hauer is her bed. And I remember the first time I watched that being so creeped out.
What? You also dissed it when we watched it this time.
Well, it's just who ties a red ribbon in their hair? It's crazy.
You don't know what you want.
I really don't.
I like anytime she's with Pike because I think he's real cute.
Yeah, me too. And they've got really good chemistry.
Yeah, I like when she hops on a motorcycle. I like that he shows up wherever she is because he wants to help and make sure she's okay.
I've been looking for you all through Hollywood and LA.
When there's no cell phones. I've just been driving around trying to find you.
So fucking weird. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Good job.
And then, you know, in the end, I really love the relationship of a slayer and a watcher.
You were getting like these little whimsical vibes from Donald Sutherland sometimes when he's like, oh, I would love to make shoes. That was really sweet.
In the series, Giles, is the idea that he dies and comes back over and over again? It's not, right?
No.
Another watcher. So why is it that this one goes through reincarnation? And it seems like Buffy did too, because her face was the same for all past slayers.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe that was just her dream. But I think the implication was it was the same people every single time, century after century.
Yeah, I don't know. It would have been great if they had explained that to us.
Yeah. And in the series, the watchers and the slayers were all different.
And watchers got called for potential slayers that maybe never got called.
Oh, that's a bum deal. You're benched your whole life.
Right. Fucking rude.
Do they know they're watchers?
They're part of a whole council of watchers.
Do they know who their slayers are?
Yeah.
I thought there was just one slayer at a time.
There's into every generation a slayer is born, but there's a whole bunch of extras just in case on her first day she fucking dies.
And then that a new one is put into work immediately?
Yep. A new one gets activated and it's like, ba-choo!
Interesting.
Which is why it was so interesting in season two when we found out there were two slayers. There were two slayers because Buffy died while battling the master at the season finale of season one, but only for like a minute.
I remember that. And Faith showed up.
Because Kendra got murdered by Drusilla. Love you, Drusilla. Love you. You lost a lot of blood. What's going on with this period of your life? What's the best thing that you've watched in recent history other than this movie?
Playboy documentary.
Oh.
It's really good. It's terrible information. It's just very upsetting, but it's a really it's a good documentary. It's called The Secret of Playboy. That's really fantastic. Just finished Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey.
And that is super fucked.
So fucked.
Super fucked. It's about Church of Latter-day Saints, right? Mormons?
Yes. And pluralism and polygamy and a child rapist just brainwashing an entire population of people.
There's a wonderful show on Hulu called Under the Banner of Heaven, starring Andrew Garfield, that deals with similar themes.
I don't understand why. So in every religion, there is terrible things that happen and somehow they don't have to pay taxes.
Yep.
I'm not sure why they get to not pay taxes.
Don't know. Can't answer.
Is it supposed to be separation of church and state?
Yep.
It's the best thing that you've watched.
Two things. First thing. No, I've got a couple of things. You're right. I have a lot of things. I finally watched The Woman King.
Oh, is it good?
Loved it. Talk about like a perfect Joseph Campbell hero journey story.
Mm-hmm.
Delightful and beautiful and moving. Everyone ran around barefooted. You'd love it.
I love it already.
Viola Davis was in fucking incredible, of course.
Of course she was.
I watched a crazy great super intellectual film starring Adam Driver called White Noise, directed by Noah Baumbach, who has collaborated with Wes Anderson. So like the similar intellectualism was really lovely. And last but not least, on Netflix, I started watching Korean competition show where 100 people compete, women, men, theys and thems probably. They all compete to find out who has the best physique and they got to hang from stuff. They knew that we all watched the Squid Game and went, wow, that Squid Game sure was fun. And they're like, cool, let's make this real and make it feel like the Squid Game, but no murder.
It's on Netflix?
Uh-huh.
I want to watch it.
Dude, there are so many delicious, beautiful human beings to look at and they all have their shirts off.
Sweet.
Yeah. is so great. The sportsmanship in this competition thus far has been really lovely.
Interesting.
Yeah, the smack talk has been really adorable. They've been like, well, you suck and I'm going to take you down. And the other person's been like, you suck. And then they bow to each other and then go fucking fight. And then when they're fighting, they're like, this is so much fun.
They're literally fighting. They're not hanging from things. They're fighting.
Oh, I don't want to spoil.
We have to finish this. I'm going to go watch this immediately.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. See you later. Bye.
Later, suckers.
Seriously, the sources are the life. We watched this on a Blu-ray that I own, but I'm pretty sure you can rent it or stream it in lots of places. We referenced IMDb a lot. And join us on the Patreon. Donate to us there. Become a Patreon member. There's lots of stuff also. And go donate at littlerenegadefilms.com for a one-time donation. And or also write us a review.
Please write us a review.
Yeah, check out our other offerings. They're all listed on our website. You can also find us on Instagram where we talk about stuff. Little Renegade Films.
We have a link tree there that gives you everything.
And we love you.
We love you.
And we're not mad at you.
We're just having PMS.
It's just cramps.
Sarah Marie just says PMS.
It's just vampire cramps.
Okay.
So suck it up and remember.
Until next time, let's all take a real long time to die.
Yeah. A really goofy, really long time to die. Because it's delightful. He had such a fun time.
He did.
I wonder what I would have said if I were feeling this way when we watched Harry Nilsson's movie with Ringo Starr.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
I wonder if you and I were just yell about how terrible it is together.
Probably.
Maybe.
Later, suckers.
Grr. Arg. Bloodsuckers is a podcast by Little Renegade Films. It stars Casey Sammy and Sarah Marie Curry. Executive produced by Travis Donald. Silent contributions by Taylor Novak and Stephanie Slayton. Title and closing theme are by Tosin Awufeso. Follow us on the social medias at Bloodsuckers Pod. And for more of our offerings, go to littlerenegadefilms.com.
I'm a vampire. A vampire.
I'm a
vampire.